A few days have passed since the Golden Tree Guild woke up in their beds, having gone adventuring in their dreams the night before. After some collective curiosity and at least one member of the party being a little surprised about what a dream is.
It took several explanations of what was happening for her to really believe it.
It's not every night. It's just sometimes you don't even remember them.
That took up a good hunk of it. And after a few decisions to inform the various people and authority figures in their life, the Golden Tree has been summoned. They have been summoned to the Ruby Citadel, the centerpiece of the entirety of this city. Huge, imposing, beautiful walls containing many of the city's inner workings, a lot of its bureaucrats, etc., but also, some wonder, containing some of its darkest secrets. In front of you, leading you through the hallways, is trusty shift captain Namgar.
Namgar!
Nam!
Who has, you know, checked in on you a little bit the last couple days, make sure you're good. But today came asking your presence as soon as possible at the Ruby Citadel. And after obviously joining for probably a group breakfast, maybe a stop at Torts and Ports, all that kind of stuff, you found your way here. Eventually, you go to a door that you have certainly never been in before, deep in the recesses of this fortress. The door is opened and the stairs lead down. There's a lot of echoes as you traipse downwards. First of your footfalls, then of voices, of tools, of rattling books and paper. Maybe a chainsaw once, I don't know. And eventually, you are brought into a sub-sub-basement.
And Kaskrin, too, as we're walking down this hallway into this place of the Citadel we've never been before, is kind of joking with Namgar, like, Nam, what is this? Are you taking us to jail? I mean, come on. What's with all the cloak and dagger?
No, Kaskrin, they don't have a jail. I asked.
Right.
He actually tried to get into it.
Right, no. That's that's not here. That's not here. We keep other things here. You'll see. Yeah.
You'll all see.
That's where he turns around and stabs you all.
Is it like mostly like, is it well lit, or is it just like, is there like a torch every like, you know, 20 or 30 feet, or?
As you're descending the stairs, it is pretty poorly lit. It is up to Fantasy OSHA standards, but only barely. Eventually, it opens into a large and fairly simplistic room, at least in terms of decor and such, that is absolutely teeming, certainly with light, but mostly with activity. You see a few familiar faces, definitely some guards. You would see a few, probably scholars from the library who are still there. We'll even say Val, your mom, Mira Carter, is already there, towering over the rest of the people.
And sorry, I forgot my mom was a Goliath.
Yes, is literally a full 26 inches taller than you. Is 7'2". Yeah. I double checked it before we started recording, and you are 5 foot flat. And she's one of the few people who notice as you guys come in, and she kind of gives you a little wave as she looks up from her clipboard. And standing next to her is Vina Calvetta, who waves you guys over. Vina, captain of the Red Guard, and, you know, sort of protector of the city. Locks eyes with you, kind of nods. Thank you all for being here. And she says, we've been running tests on it for the last 48 hours. And we haven't really come up with anything.
Kaskrin kind of chimes in, looking at this, taking it all in. And he sees Vina, he sees Mira. And behind them is kind of these teams of, you know, working on this thing. And he sees in like this subterranean area on this kind of giant raised platform. Laying down on this side is this immense obsidian obelisk. All around it are these kinds of researchers running different tests on it. Some of them are taking small samples. Some of them are testing how it reacts to different substances. Others are taking a less gentle approach. But there is just the hustle and bustle and background noise of science.
You hear a big explosion. Sorry about that, y'all.
Well, I know what the problem is. You didn't have the most important part. Me.
Vina kind of slowly turns her gaze down to Checkers.
She noticed me.
And she says, well, that was one of the possibilities we had wondered. But Checkers, if you would stay for a few moments, we will, you know, run a few tests with you, to you, etc.
Checkers, like, rolls up invisible sleeves, like, all right, time to shine.
Mostly, we just wanted to show you the setup, certainly invite you all here anytime that you choose to, well, frankly, do anything you might be able to help.
Kaskrin turns back to Vina and says, I mean, I think we told you really everything that happened in the dream. We saw Celestia Dreamweaver down in the catacombs, and she took us into a vision, a spell, a dreamscape. We fought those three creatures, people that she said were important.
And she also told you how I was the key to the whole thing, because she called me her chosen and her champion, and that was really important. I just thought you would like to know that.
I recall that from the notes.
Val put it in there a couple of times. I double-checked.
Yes, I did notice that some of the mentions were in crayon.
And Kaskrin is like kind of pinching the bridge of his nose, and is like, I mean, he is right, kind of. Maybe.
Yes. Yes, he is.
I'm ready whenever you are, Vina.
Yes. Checkers, please, could you find your potion smith somewhere back there? And he had a few ideas.
I mean, I think the research team here has things well in hand, I'm sure. Checkers will add some things to
whatever the daily, he does.
Daily list.
As a brief description again, is there anything carved on the obelisk, or is it just jet black smooth obsidian almost?
I don't know. Nathan does not know. I'll double check that. That's a great question. I can't remember though. I think maybe, but. Mm-hmm.
I think it was smooth.
I think it was too, but I don't know. It's easy in fantasy settings to be like, and all those or, runes or on the magic thing, right?
What do you mean you don't remember over 100 episodes ago?
Yeah, right, and this idea we came up with 15 minutes ago.
Or
right?
It's smooth now.
Well, could be. Etrus, now that Etrus has gone with it. Anyway, at that, Val's mom actually comes over. I think we're proceeding. We have some ideas. Yep, good job, Checkers. Looking good. What is Checkers doing that she is giving you a thumbs up?
Checkers is perched on top of the obelisk, just like with his hands on top of his head, just rotating his head around, trying to get
a signal.
Yeah,
very, very good, Checkers. Leave no stone unturned.
Perhaps the wider hat would get a better
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And he pulls out the big hat that he got from Lorana Moonglove.
Sure, that he carries with him everywhere.
All the time, yes.
Namgar, you said this door locks from the outside, right? Is this our chance?
I don't... that's above my pay grade.
Go.
I don't know. Mira says, well, I think he might be here for a little while, but I actually had made a little bit of headway in figuring out a little bit of information about the beings, the shadows, the echoes, whatever, that you fought in the dream. And I'd love to share them with you later today, just so we can keep abreast of things, maybe back at the guild house, once Checkers is done with, she looks back, whatever he's doing. What is he doing now, Jonathan?
I don't want to say he's, like, licking it, but that might be what he's doing.
That's
it. We've established he is a taste-based learner, we'll say.
Highly food-motivated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We just wanted to bring you here just to kind of show you what we're working with. Again, let you know, this place is pretty open to you guys. I mean, there's, like, a lot of forms to fill out, obviously. Psychic manipulation, that sort of thing. We don't know exactly what we're dealing with here, but, you know, it's open to you guys, and we have whole teams working on this. I'll wait for Checkers to be done with the things for today, and then he and I can head back, maybe meet you guys to kind of go over some stuff later on today. If that works?
That sounds good. We can compare notes.
Yes, I'm not sure how much of use I will be here.
Yeah, I'm getting some spooky vibes from this room.
There is
it's like the command center during like World War Z or
yeah,
something.
It is. It is very busy, and the obelisk has a presence.
Yeah.
It's not like weighty, but it's one of those where no matter where you look, it feels like it's somewhere kind of in the corner of your eyes, just because of how much space it takes up in this, how much attention is being paid to it, and probably the fact that you know what it has a connection to as well.
I almost get the sense that, like, being down here, we can tell this kind of, like, thrumming energy coming from this thing, despite, like, literally nothing about it is powered. Like, there's no reason for it to be emanating anything.
No.
It's just, like...
I love that idea, especially, like, it's been a part of the festivities of the Day of Returning for many years now, and no one had really had any suspicion about, well, whatever the hell it did whenever it chose Checkers as its champion. But it's something. Eventually, the camera swoops back. It shows Checkers doing jumping jacks on the obelisk, perhaps.
Backflips.
Like that balancing on one foot with his arms.
Helps everything. You see teams once again turned back towards the obelisk.
So Namgar, second ale for this morning?
No, he says, looking over at Vina Calvetta to ensure as he is blocking away that she hears.
I mean,
I gotta do
some fresh squeezed juice?
Patrols around the city to walk around with whatever. We'll debrief.
I got some guild patrols.
Right. It's patrol day.
Yeah,
it's
patrol day.
Just grabs both of them like around the shoulder and is like, yes, patrols this way. Let's keep patrolling this way,
and
guys.
Namgar leans in. He's like, more like port troll day.
hey.
Smash cut.
Yeah.
You all are in the map room. I don't know if we've established what overhead projector technology there is here in the map room. You all are seated classroom style in the map room. And everyone in the guild has returned, including Checkers. Checkers, describe to me any lingering effects that Checkers may be feeling in the wake of whatever test that he has gone through, keeping in mind that one of the canonical scientists, air quote scientists, that was in this room was Potion Smith Etrus.
I just keep thinking, like, I think he's unconscious.
He's just like, he's unable to like move his body. Like, he's still there and with it, but just like all of his limbs aren't moving at the moment.
You can blink.
I'm just imagining he's like, you know, a little kid. He's just like plum tuckered himself out. And Mira's just carrying him home like a little baby.
Yeah.
just like the little guy he is.
Yeah. And like his little foot and his arms just dangling out from
mangoes just flip-flopping behind.
Yes, that we're gonna go with that one.
Okay, that
yeah,
sounds
he
right.
He is 2 years old. So right, like, let's try next.
Just a little guy. And so, Mira Carter, you guys, you know, she's been here a couple days now, and again, you obviously knew Val's mom a little bit from your time in Rockmoon when you were training, when you were just baby guilders. And if there is one thing that Mira Carter is prepared for, It is a presentation. She has clearly already precast and prepared several spells just for the occasion, because up on the wall, superimposed over everything, is a blank white screen. Imagine an overhead projector. Thank you all for joining me here today. Vale and I and the very exceptional staff at the Agmar Library have done a little bit of digging and, well, unfortunately, we're in the early kind of foundational stage of fact getting, which we in the research business like to call wading through the bull pucky, if you will. Not a lot of books. A lot of books have been read. A lot of papers have been read. A lot of maps consulted. And we now know what books useful information is not in. So that's big progress. And she like looks at Val.
Val is like kind of giving thumbs up to everyone. I was like, you guys, this is a big deal.
This is really good, actually.
So, and Sel will nod and just say,
that is what wonderful news. Narrowing it down is always it makes you feel good when you
right?
narrow
yeah,
it down.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Please continue.
Catherine looks around very confusedly and then like starts clapping.
This is the presentation.
Yeah.
Is it the slow clap? Like
no, no, it's like a very congratulatory,
the polite.
It's clearly a momentous occasion that we've witnessed.
Yes,
with,
I don't understand
why.
It, but I am supportive of it.
One quick point of clarification.
Yes,
is she doing this all with Checkers still in her arms?
That's up to Checkers.
I'll say no. Checkers would be sleeping on Mango at this point.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, I kind of wanted Checkers passed out on the desk of doing.
We've found at least some references to all three of them. They were all historic figures. They're all people from the area, from this area. And specifically, all three are major resistance points against the Pentarchy throughout their centuries of conquest. The kind of easiest one to kind of paint the example is a Marmoros Stone Spire. He was the, she flips through her notes and she takes her finger on a piece of paper and flings it up magically onto the projector screen behind her. This one was actually one of the ones we found the most information about because he was actually the leader of the city that the Pentarchy raised to create Agmar. Gesset was the name of the city. It was a fairly major power in the area for a while, especially in the early days of the Pentarchy. It was democratic, and Stonespire was the final chancellor of the city and was actually killed in the final battle that led to the total surrender of what was effectively one of the last kind of independent holdouts against the Pentarchy. Yes, Kaskrin.
And Kaskrin has raised his hand and puts it back down again. Did Marmoros Stonespine or the other two have objects of focus? Were they known for anything like that?
Yes, most certainly, in fact. One of the signature symbols of power of the city, and actually one of the ones that actually helped them hold on to their city for as long as they did, was the final object of focus that was ever created, the Shroud of Resurrection, which, as you all know, was very quickly adopted as a signature item of Celestia Dreamweaver, leader of the Pentarchy.
And Kaskrin raises his hand one more time.
Yes, Kaskrin.
Do we know anything more about this, the Shroud of Resurrection?
Yes, what do we know what it does? Or, based on what you had said previously, what it does not do?
Yeah, well, yes and no. We know its origins. The Shroud of Resurrection was created when one of the princesses of the kingdom died, and she was very beloved. She was a shining beacon, really a symbol of the future of the city, and the people mourned her so much that at her wake, when she was lying in state and all the people of the city were lining up to pay her respects, it's said that the wave of emotion and sadness and grief was so powerful that the death shroud that she wore became an object of focus. Certainly, there is a degree of resilience offered. We believe some amount of imperviousness to injury, or at least rapid healing, some amount of ability to heal others and cure sicknesses, and presumably, given the name, some amount of being able to raise the dead. Unfortunately, according to legend, not the princess who died, but several other significant members of the Gesed community over the years were able to be brought back to life. It seems like not everyone. It was perhaps where there's a significant person, a great loss that was mourned, was able to be brought back, but certainly very powerful and became a cornerstone of what the Pentarchy became.
Again, it's hard to get information from all this because Celestia and the other members of the Pentarchy didn't want anyone to really know about this information.
Correct.
So knowing this much is pretty rare and beneficial.
Yes, and so we're not exactly sure why it is of note yet. Obviously, other than the fact it is feels significant that it is based here in the city. Like Val said, the Pentarchy didn't love keeping too many records about the history of those that they conquered, but that just means that I'll have to fill out a P460-R form to get some support back at the Aethium. They have much more complete records, and so I think we'll, you know, give it a couple days, but I think we'll be able to make some headway, hopefully, on that.
Also, this section of the restricted section does have flaming hoops in it. So that was a bit complicated.
Yes, we're working on that. We have some very surprisingly spry librarians trying to navigate that. And
trying to jump through the hoops.
Precisely, yes.
The flaming hoops.
Yes.
But also do it in a way that doesn't trigger any, let's say, game show contestant-based defense mechanisms that may still be in place.
The second you hear the inkling of a theme song, like, you gotta get them out of here.
Yes, yes. Val was very, very, very explicit about that. And we've had a couple of close calls, but, things are progressing.
Is Agmar on the location where Gesed was? Or was it just the materials that were used from that city to build this one at a different location?
Horrifyingly, based off of the few witnesses that were allowed there during the, I guess you could call it construction, the city was surrounded by the five members of the Pentarchy, as well as a few of their most powerful magical assistants and such, exactly. And whatever they did brought the literal walls crumbling down all at once. And then, through a series of rituals afterwards, taking only a few hours, rebuilt it exactly on the spot.
Was Gesed also red?
No, it was not.
That's what I was afraid of.
There's been a lot of people who have tried to learn more about the walls over the years. It remains quite mysterious. Yes, Kaskrin.
Kaskrin raises his hand a third time.
Mm-hmm.
And the other two.
Well, I'll start with the worst news. Varala Diwali, the individual who appeared to be perhaps a member of a dragon monastery, a champion, it sounds like, or at least some sort of resident. Mainly, each monastery was so independent. Many died out during the Great Disappearing when the saints and dragons left. The history is a scattershot at best. We do have the details of the uniform. We have the name and some other information. So that gives us something to work with. And Selv, the errand that you and I may be running could offer details, perhaps.
Good, good. Any indication of what monastery?
All we can guess is, not to profile, but the bronze coloration, certainly, of the uniform leads us in that direction. No offense, you seem to wear your colors on your sleeves.
This is true.
So that is kind of the direction that we're looking. There were not too many bronze dragons active in the area, so hopefully that'll give us some good threads to pull on. But we'll say the one we have the most information on, the Grung, the far eye, Chaturanga Grumbingle, she says, trying to make sure she really hits all the words just right. She once again throws it up onto the wall. This one took some digging, but actually proved very fruitful. At one point, he was the leader of a Grung tribe known as the Ingatan that allied themselves with the Pentarchy.
And at that, Checkers wakes up.
like rising. Like.
Yeah, well, so Checkers' body has been shuddering the whole time. As soon as you mention Virala Diwali, there's just like this unconscious, like,
twitch.
Electrical twitch.
Yeah, right. But at the mention of the Grung and of the Ingatan specifically, Checkers is like, hey, wait a second. I know that name.
Would Val's mom know that?
Would Val's mom,
like,
you
have already known that that is the name of your tribe?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I feel like she would ask but not press, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like she would try to learn more, and if Checkers, especially probably at that point in his life, Checkers was like, I really don't want to talk about that.
Yeah.
I think she would be like, cool, that's fine. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
I love that Checkers experienced that twice. First with Val, and then with Val's mom.
Yeah. For sure.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I think for the most part, Checkers have maintained like, well, I just showed up on the mainland and here I am.
Right, exactly. And I think both the Carters are adept enough to be like, all right, cool. We don't need to ask about that. Yeah, that's fine. He'll tell us later.
That's because they both have access to detect thoughts.
Well, also true.
I would love like a little world building fact that will never come up is that Val probably been like, oh, so you like enjoy being an enigma, and then whenever Checkers is asked, he's just like, I'm an enigma.
And he likes it because it does sound like the right answer.
Yeah. I don't know what that is, but I am.
My mom says I'm an enigma.
Val's mom probably takes a little note that you sit up to it, but is just going to keep going for now. And she says, so this Far Eye is basically a footnote to history, frankly, because he was actually deposed before the tribe joined forces with the Pentarchy, with his successor being essentially a puppet who was the one to steer the tribe into the alliance. Best that we can tell is that he was captured and spent probably the remainder of his days in the capital city of the Pentarchy and presumably lost his life during Sunfall, which is a bit of a dead end, obviously, but I feel confident enough as a scholar to propose a theory that must, of course, go through rigorous scientific testing and, you know, further research, that sort of thing. Because this tribe joined the Pentarchy relatively late in the span of the Empire, they were only a handful of years before Sunfall. And in a book that we found called Grungs Galore, An Analysis of Amphibious Associations, which was surprisingly informative despite the title, did give us some clues into the culture at the time. I haven't really been able to look into whatever their current culture, if they still even exist, but they at the time were apparently convinced that they could summon spirits directly from some sort of like an elemental plane. A few years later, after this tribe was absorbed, the Pentarchy brought down a sun and seemingly summoned elemental horrors that destroyed life as we know it. So, I will be spending a portion of my next research allotment seeing if that connection bears fruit.
So, that is the only location that is not here. The other two are associated with Agmar.
No, only the giant would
Stone
have been.
Spine.
Yeah, so they don't know about the monastery.
Virala, yet. Yeah.
Yeah. Virala is still unknown.
Right, okay.
Kaskrin has this like pensive look on his face. He's deep in thought and he just says, wow, you can really just name books whatever you want, huh?
Kaskrin, yeah. I appreciate the freedom to express yourself in titles, and that is all I will say about that. Yep. Yes.
You found Mirakar. Yeah.
The one irrational hatred that she has is nonsense book titles.
I mean, this book title is all just consonants. How did that happen?
I agree that people should not just be able to name things whatever they want. Like, even if you have, like, the names of chapters or episodes of some kind of book, you shouldn't just be able to willy-nilly name them any kind of pun you want. That's just ridiculous.
It's the puns and alliteration that really grind my gears.
I can't
just set them off for the next like half hour.
Mom, wait. You can't go down this rabbit hole again.
You are right. Both I as a person and I as a librarian must take all books and not judge them by their cover or title, and only by the content of the information. And technically, Grung's Galore and an analysis of amphibious associations was very helpful in my research.
At this point, Checkers raises his little Grung hand.
Yes. She like looks at Val to be like, is this normal? He raises his hands now?
Yeah, it's working.
Yes, Checkers. Yeah, yes. What can I do?
Did the book say anything about where the Ingaton came from before they joined the Pentarchy and before Sunfall?
Interestingly, there isn't a ton of information about it, despite there being a decent amount of records about it. It seems like somewhere in the middle of the sea, essentially. There is an island that they came from. There's not precise coordinates. We might be able to infer where that might be based off of a few context clues if we cross-reference them from some other older maps of the era, that sort of thing. But that's kind of the best idea that we have.
No, that's fine. You don't have to.
I mean, we probably will because it'll be helpful.
Yeah. She's just like looking at literally every member of the guild to be like, I don't know. I haven't learned how to talk to Checkers in this sort of capacity yet. What? Go on.
Oh no, I'm unconscious.
We just let that go.
Okay. Yep.
We just let him do that.
He'll come to us when he's ready.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep. So, Stonespine was here, and Agmar was created from the ruins of his city.
Yes.
We have explored a lot of Agmar. Would it be helpful then for us to take a look at the other Pentarchy capital in Sunfall that we knew this Grung supposedly died?
Well, I'm not... going to the Deadlands is not recommended, I would say.
Mom, I know you say that, but one, technically, as you know, we've already been there.
I do know.
I know it makes you uncomfortable, yep. But I will say it is our strongest lead, so we probably should go back.
I suppose any information we find there would be untainted because nobody's been able to get there.
But also, nobody's been able to get there. So
You see that Mira has like teleported behind Castrin in this moment and is like just nodding her head and is like, well, that's a good point. That's very interesting. Yeah.
Yes. Good points. That is an obstacle we have to find a solution for. But I think if we can find that solution, we might be able to be some of the first people to find very valuable information.
I'm all for scientific curiosity, but I mean, listen to yourselves. You're saying we need to go to Sunfall?
Well, safety first. And this is not my expertise, but could we magically look there first?
No, actually. Val's mom jumps in immediately trying to cut this idea down at the knees as much as possible. No, that's kind of, I mean, a defining characteristic, especially of the area. Magic and life just don't exist there as far as we can tell. Teleportation does not work. Anything that touches the ground is sapped of its magic after a time. It is, as far as we can tell, inhospitable to life and magic and all things. So,
and the perfect place to hide.
Well,
I mean, what about Varala? Like, we still don't know anything about them, right?
They will take some time to learn information from, because we do have to rely on reaching out to the Bronze Dragon monasteries that still exist. We have to work with them. That's not records a library will necessarily have, or at least that our library has. The illustrious Atheum is digging into it, but right now it's a waiting game.
So you're saying there's a chance?
I am saying there's a chance, but I'm saying it's wasted time if we sit here and wait. And instead, we could go to Sunfall and work on the lead of the Grung. Because before it was Sunfall, it was the capital city of the Pentarchy. What was the name of it?
Gesset.
No.
Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. I literally don't remember.
So that's where the Pentarchy power was. I think Celestia Dreamweaver is sending us these people for a reason. And going back to the seat of her power will probably yield something.
Well, if we need a second option that might not be as dangerous, Mira, if we can use that spell of yours to talk to Jornas, the Halcyon Worm, the skull in the plaza. Mm. They might know. I mean, the monasteries are ancient. They might know, have more information about this, whatever bronze monastery we need to be looking for.
Agreed. I think that's a great next place to turn. We can shelve the idea of going to the Deadlands for a while for us to maybe churn over that idea and the potential mortal implications of it at a later time. And do you want to go now? I only used a few of my spell slots setting up the presentation. They're all ritual spells, so it's fine.
I think it's something that is better sooner than later.
You know me. I'll continue to research Sunfall at a later time.
Your mom looks at you and is torn. And you are so close to your mom that you know exactly what is running through her head. And you don't even have to cast Detect Thoughts. You have Detect Mom Thoughts. And it is definitely a, oh God, why couldn't she have just stayed a librarian? But also, God, she's awesome.
Kaskrin is just like going back and forth with Val's, like, name one good thing that's happened since we left the city. Like, only bad things happen outside the walls of Agmar, all right?
I'm not saying like it's not dangerous, but I am saying that that's our best lead. And I would like the city that you love so much to stay a city protected from an altar giant. And to do that, I think we gotta go to Sunfall. I don't want to go to Sunfall. I think we just gotta go to Sunfall.
We only made it like a mile outside the walls of Agmar before everything started going to hell. I mean, like, literally, statistically speaking, and they just like
The beauty of this is that Mira and Selv are already leaving, and presumably Val is also coming along. Yeah. And it's like, this is going while walking
and
backwards.
Yeah. And actually, they're Val and Cass are arguing. And then Selv kind of like is a little bit further ahead with Mira, kind of leading everybody out. And he just kind of says to her in a very low voice,
"Don't even get me started on the mimic houses." Ugh.
Actually, I actually need to know more about those. I saw all of Val's sketches and they were horrifying, but they were second out of camps. We'll get to it.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hello, this is your pilot speaking. I would like to welcome you to Reckless Airlines. Our total flight time for this episode is approximately 1 hour, and we will be cruising at an altitude of 2,000 frog stacks. In a little bit, the flight attendants will be by with complimentary clips and excerpts from previous Reckless Attack episodes. We know you have a lot of choices when it comes to 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons actual play podcasts, and we would like to thank you for choosing ours. If you enjoyed your experience during today's episode, please be sure to fill out the in-flight survey and leave us a rating or review, or tell a friend. Book your next flight with us at www.recklessattack.com, and thank you for listening.
Jonathan.
Yes.
So, everyone else, their attention is elsewhere. I don't know if, Kaskrin, if you were just continuing this conversation, if you walked out of the door or if you just went through the door.
I'm walking out the door.
Then we'll say the Checkers is fake passed out by himself in the map room.
Yes.
Having heard information, Checkers is alone in the room. What happens next?
So Checkers thinks of something that he has not thought of in a while. And that is his birthplace, his home, the place he comes from, and the tribe that he left all those months ago. And hearing it brought back up now, especially in the context of the Pentarchy, of Sunfall, of the Deadlands, and realizing that potentially investigating this further will take him and his friends into mortal peril, a place that is completely unsuited to life, it is bringing up some interesting feelings for him, because he wants to go. He wants to go check it out, and like, but he also wants to avoid anything that like really digs into his past, and, he wants to avoid, you know, dragging his friends into a place that is actually, you know, dangerous even for him. So he thinks about that for a bit, and he touches the necklace around his neck, the one that he tried to get rid of all those many hundreds of episodes ago. And he, too, is conflicted for maybe the first time in his life.
The four of you are arguing and traversing. It's actually, it's not super far into the city to get to the giant dragon skull. And as a reminder, to kind of set the scene here, this skull is, we'll say, prominently featured here in the city. It is one of the major landmarks, in fact. It is in the middle of the museum square, right next to the library. So you have passed it many, many times, just walking basically anywhere in the city. You have to walk past it. And it is essentially the size of the library. It is colossal. The worm that it belonged to must have been easily the size of a full city block. And as you approach, you're really noticing it again. And I don't know, I won't speak for any of your characters, but I definitely know that I am someone who, you know, once you pass something 100 times, it doesn't really stand out to you. Agmar is a weird place. There's lots of weird people here, lots of weird things. Yep, and there's the big dragon skull. But you're walking to it now. Mira is kind of briefing everybody, specifically the non-Val individuals, because she would probably know this. Just saying, so, you know, the way that this spell works, the corpse can't learn any new information from when it died, so won't be able to answer anything about the Ultra Giants, the Pentarchy, the Great Disappearance, really anything past its death, which was predating all of that. It doesn't comprehend anything that has happened since it died. It also can't speculate on future events, so has to really be focused on what it experienced in its life and what it knew. Also, it might not tell the truth, frankly. My understanding is that has been the case every time that this has been tried with this particular skull. It has either been met with no answer or uncooperative answers, but, you know, I have extra spell slots today, so there's no reason for us not to give it a try, and we can try again at a later time, too, if we have to. So, again, as a little bit of history, Zhornas the Halcyon Worm, he was killed, again, before the Great Disappearance, let alone before the Pentarchy. He was known as one of the, well, largest, obviously, but also strongest dragons, not just in the area, but in history. But luckily, was more of a peacekeeper and ally, trying to, you know, broker harmonious interactions between the people that lived kind of in his territory. Unfortunately, he was slain by giants. Tales apparently say that he fought so fiercely that the assembled giant army was broken and left the area despite their victory. The Pentarchy was never exactly clear about how they acquired this artifact, as again, Zornest was reported killed elsewhere, but hopefully that's not important. We'll see. If we run out of questions, that can be one of them. Well, I guess it wouldn't. No. All right. Focus up, everybody. You arrive at the skull. I don't think anyone pays any attention to you guys. You were in a busy square, and maybe people are like, oh, it's the golden tree. They're doing something weird, huh? Well, anyway, I gotta stock up on jerky, so I'll keep going, I guess. Because this isn't the weirdest thing that these people have seen.
When this has been done in the past, how loud are the answers?
Ooh, that's an interesting question.
How loud? What decibel?
Yeah, does a right.
Colossal dragon speak at.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out if he's just going to be talking to us, or if this is like, oh, guess what, entire city of Agmar, you are hearing the answers to questions that you have not heard.
I'll make the executive GM decision. So sometimes it can be a little variable. I've studied this technique enough that I think I can control the volume a little bit, assuming we don't want everyone to hear every answer that
yes, that would
to
be,
every question.
That would be good to control the volume.
Val leans over to Cass and being like, this is kind of like her special thing. It's pretty cool. She's like the only one who can do this.
She, you know, kind of cracks her various joints.
She's going to auto-tune the dragon.
Yeah, sort of. She extends her huge arm span and she begins casting a ritual. It takes probably a few minutes, as it is a ritual casting, until eventually tiny motes of golden flame start to brighten and brighten in the empty eye sockets of this skull. Mira Carter takes a breath. You can see she's sweating now and turns around and says, okay, self, I have designated you as the person to ask the questions. Theoretically, we should all be able to ask questions, but let's not push it.
Mal mimes, zipping her lips.
Why would we push it?
Well, and then...
No, guess!
Self, what is your first question?
Hello, great Jornas. I am sorry to disturb your slumber, but I have some questions that require answers, and I believe you are the only one who knows them. My first question is, will you please tell us the location of any bronze dragon monasteries that you knew of?
And I will be asking this in Draconic.
A rumble echoes in your ears, but a rumble that sounds a little tinny, as if it's not quite there, not quite in this plane.
Ah, disciple of the mountain.
And I will bow at that.
I knew well this order. The Armalu Order, located northeast of the Great Mesa in my territory.
My next question is, what is the Armalu Order known for?
My friend, Pyre Scale, the Alloyed Judge, and her order fought many ferocious battles against those who would bring injustice to these lands.
God, hell yeah.
What a cool name.
Yeah.
Were the monasteries set up only to protect the dragon eggs, or was there another purpose in mind?
Already at the end of my days, monasteries had become many things. Sometimes parental arrangements, sometimes egotistical vanity projects, some projections of power. Housing and hatching the eggs was a natural thing, but they were intended as a way to try and understand the elements and connect to elemental planes.
As Selva is asking these questions, like, what is going on around us? Because Jorn asked the Halcyon Worm, seems to be speaking in full sentences, seems to be rather cooperative, maybe for the first time.
Genuinely, I think the lame answer is that everyone's just like, huh, the Golden Tree is doing something weird with that skull.
Okay, cool.
Like, unless you guys specifically were like, hey, we're going to tell the library we're doing this or whatever. I think people are just like, hey, it's the Golden Tree. Yeah. They're doing something.
Okay.
We're spreading to that skull.
Because specifically the volume is low, so it's not like reverberating everywhere.
Okay,
it's just
cool.
Like, it's a little conversation between you guys.
Cool.
Out in the open.
And he's responding in Draconic.
Right, yes.
So
I actually don't know.
Val and Selv are just nodding along. I don't know what languages Mira speaks.
Kaskrin is just like shaking his head, like, what a shame. We're not getting anything useful out of this.
It's just a bunch of growling.
Speaking nonsense.
Yeah.
Next question.
Will you tell me a way to safely hatch the dragon eggs that are under our monastery's protection?
Dragon eggs hatch precisely when they are fated to. When there is the correct amount of elemental energy attunement around them.
So the last question is going to be kind of a more esoteric but personal one. And so Selv will ask,
is there any knowledge or wisdom you wish to pass along to me so that it may remain in the mortal realm and not be lost to time?
Disciple of the mountain, remember this. There are worlds beyond this one, but do not forget where your home is.
And with that, the flames go out. Those of you who speak Draconic, which is two of you.
Hey, baby.
And presumably shortly thereafter you share this information. When you think about the location that this ancient worm pointed you to, while you don't know exactly where it is, you have somehow been directed to the only place on the continent that might be as dangerous as Sunfall, which is the area known only as the Shattered Abyss, known for being so dangerous and filled with horrors and monsters that, stop me if you've heard this before, no one ever returns from. And with that, we'll see you all next week.
Damn it, Selv! You're supposed to give me good news!
Yeah. Yay! Two bad options! Two bad options!
I guess we're rolling dice. can cast it because it is on your spell list.
I was just asking about spawn.
Yeah. If anyone's a ninth level caster.
I'm kind of, I'm kind of into that idea, actually, too. I'm just looking to make sure.
I just love slowly unveiling that Mira, Val's mom, is just the most badass
person. Is actually a huge badass.
Yeah. 15th level mega cleric.
Yeah, she's our campaign.
In our low magic world, Val's mom is like the highest level.
Ninth level cleric, sixth level fighter.
And what I think we can do, though, is we can very easily
and
be
five
like,
levels of rogue.
Val's mom is, she may not be a ninth level cleric, but she's definitely a ninth level librarian.